The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. So welcome, welcome. And happy MLK Day. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Today's the day that we honor his birthday. I believe he's born on January 15th. And we celebrated on a Monday. Yeah. Dr. King is like so inspiring. To be encountering so much difficulties, unimaginable. For me, it's unimaginable. Maybe not for everybody, of course, people of color. Maybe it's not so unimaginable. And yet to really be embracing what he understood, what he believed to be true, to be helpful. Nonviolence as the way forward. So inspiring, really, really. I feel so touched by it. Reading some of his quotes and from speeches and letters, and this one sentence from a letter that he wrote while he was in jail in Birmingham in 1963. He wrote, "The ultimate measure of a man." I want to think that now he would say the ultimate measure of a person, but this was 1963. So he wrote, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy." But where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. Recognizing the importance of how we show up for our difficulties. In some ways, we might think that Buddhist practice, with this recognition of suffering, is a way to help us to stand of where we stand in times of challenge and controversy. Not only where we are in moments of comfort and convenience. And part of the reason why we have these national holidays, well, I don't know exactly why we have them, but my belief is why we have them. It's partly for us to reflect on the individual for whom the holiday is honoring. And I also want to think that maybe we can be inspired by Dr. King and his teachings and the way that he showed up in the world with times of challenge and controversy. But this idea of to be inspired, certainly he was inspired. But what does this mean for us, like to be inspired? Is there a way that we can awaken or become aware of or dream, if I'm allowed to use that word on MLK Day, to dream of new possibilities, new potentials for us and our communities and our society and something that's bigger than our ordinary experiences and beyond our limitations of this moment. That kind of like moves us towards what's possible. Can we allow ourselves to be inspired in such a way that maybe something more is possible than what we were thinking. Maybe when we feel closed down or disconnected, can we, or maybe when we feel fear, and kind of there's this collapse of awareness around our experience, of course there is. Is there a way in which some inspiration can support us and help us to bring a little bit more space, a little bit more ease, if that's possible, into the moment, into the situation, so that it might unfold differently than if we stayed collapsed and closed and afraid? So, in some ways, the Buddha talked about this. And this sutta, it's not one that we often hear about in Dharma talks, but it's one way in which the Buddha, he's talking to his followers about what to do when they're afraid. And he uses what I think is inspiration to help support them. He wants them to feel inspired, to feel like something more is possible. Something, the potential is there, and to not stay contracted and collapsed and in our tunnel vision. If there's imminent danger, of course, tunnel vision is required and necessary to help us get out of the threat. But sometimes we just have generalized anxiety, or maybe there isn't an imminent danger. We just have this feeling of apprehension or anxiety. So the Buddha is talking to his followers and he says, if you've gone to a forest or to the foot of a tree or to an empty hut, presumably to go meditate, he's often in the suttas, he's giving this kind of like a standard phrase that he gives to people, to go to these places to meditate. So if you've gone to a forest or to the foot of a tree or to an empty hut and fear or trepidation or terror should arise in you, so he's recognizing that sometimes it's scary to be out in the woods by yourself or maybe in an empty hut. If fear or trepidation or terror should arise in you, on that occasion, you should recollect me. That is, bring the Buddha to mind. He's suggesting that they call to mind the Buddha. And he says, for when you recollect me, whatever fear or trepidation or terror you may have will be abandoned. So this idea of maybe feeling inspired or by the Buddha, himself, of course, is an awakened person, but feeling inspired that awakening is possible. And even if awakening we can't quite relate to that, doesn't resonate with us, we're not even quite sure what it is, that's okay. But this idea that we can move that direction towards greater and greater freedom, maybe a little bit of faith. Sometimes faith is about awakening in the Buddha. So this idea of when we feel afraid, is there something that's inspiring, somebody that's inspiring that we can bring to mind that can be a support for us, that might help kind of like broaden our awareness, as well as maybe bring a little bit of comfort or a little bit of more ease. And then the Buddha continues, he says, if you cannot recollect me, if for whatever reason you can't bring the Buddha to mind, but you still are feeling afraid and terror, he says, then you should recollect the Dharma. For when you recollect the Dharma, whatever fear or trepidation or terror you may have will be abandoned. I appreciate this kind of like a plan B. Okay, if you can't bring to mind the Buddha, then bring to mind the Dharma. And we might think that as teachings. The Dharma can be translated so many different ways, as you probably know. But one, of course, is the teachings. Maybe also we could think of practices. So maybe there's some wisdom. I think it's Utejaniya who says borrowed wisdom. So maybe something that we haven't experienced ourselves, but that we've heard in a Dharma talk that really touches us and makes sense to us in some kind of way that brings some comfort and some ease. Maybe sometimes even this idea of impermanence, like it doesn't, maybe at the moment when we're afraid, it feels like it's permanent, it's going to really stay there. Maybe some borrowed wisdom, maybe even borrowed from an earlier version of ourselves, is, okay, yes, but I know that things don't last. Of course, they end, and also they're inconstant. And if we pay attention, we'll see that they might be fluctuating in and out of our awareness. Maybe that's one example of recollecting the Dharma. There's an official, I'm using this word official, there's a passage that describes the Dharma. It's like a standard passage I don't have it here in front of me, but it's visible here and now, immediate. So what is some teachings that might be something for you that you can bring to mind as a support, as inspiration? And then maybe you won't be surprised if there is a plan C. If you cannot recollect the Dharma, then you should recollect the Sangha, the community of practitioners, and or those individuals who are awakened or have some freedom or seem to have a little bit more freedom or more ease. Can they be inspiring? Can they support you, bringing them to mind? Or maybe even the idea that you're part of a Sangha, a practice community. However that practice community might be, in whatever way. Maybe these are individuals that you know. Maybe it's not individuals that you know personally, but you see them on YouTube, or maybe you attend Zoom teachings with them, or maybe even you've read a book from a Dharma teacher and feel some resonance with them. Is there a way that you can use that as a support when you're feeling fear and trepidation and terror? And then the Buddha continues, and he says, for what reason? So why should you, when you're feeling terror, bring these three different things, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, to mind? Because the Tathagata, the way that the Buddha referred to himself, because the Tathagata, the Arhat, the perfectly enlightened one, is devoid of greed, devoid of hatred, devoid of delusion. He is brave, courageous, bold, and ready to stand his place. So bring into mind that it's possible to be abandoned, to have eliminated greed, hatred, and delusion. And the Buddha, he taught so that these teachings may be brought to others, that we might learn from them how we can have less greed, less hatred, and less delusion. So it can be worthwhile to think about what is inspirational for us. Maybe it's Dr. King. That can support us not only when on, you know, the second or third Monday of January or whenever we celebrate MLK Day, but on those times when we need it, when we need support, when we're feeling afraid. So this recollection of the Buddha's maybe bringing to mind the person who realized freedom, and to just kind of connect with that, with the potential, the possibility. But lest we think that, okay, the Buddha is some being that just doesn't resonate for us, which is okay, that might be the case. He also tells a story of before he was awakened, how he worked with fear, how he worked with fear. While he was still finding his way, while he was still navigating how to work with suffering. And he tells this story that he actually recognized that it was an issue or a problem, or I don't know if I should say that word, but he wanted to intentionally work with fear and dread. He saw that this was arising in himself before he was awakened. And so he said, he tells this story. He's telling this story to a group of people who are, and they're talking about fear and dread, and he's telling it as he's an awakened person, and he's telling it about what he used to do before he was awakened. He says, he thought to himself, there are certain nights that are recognized as especially auspicious. On such nights, why don't I stay in awe-inspiring and hair-raising shrines in parks, forests, and trees? When we read this awe-inspiring, I think it's really, you know, fearful, scary places. Hair-raising, right? Places that are really scary. Shrines in parks, forests, and trees. I don't know exactly what the beliefs were there in ancient India at the time, but I'm imagining that they had this idea that there was certain locations that were scarier than other locations. Maybe like we have sometimes this idea that going to cemeteries, right, is an auspicious place, and maybe like a cemetery on a full moon or something like that. It's kind of the equivalent of this. He continues, in such locations, I might see fear and dread. And he had that thought, and sometime later, that's what I did. So he's there on these nights in these auspicious places, awe-inspiring, hair-raising places. And he says, as I was staying there, a deer came by, or a peacock snapped a twig, or the wind rustled the leaves. So these three things, they might cause fear, but they're not going to harm. A deer, a peacock, or the wind that's just rustling leaves is not going to harm somebody who's sitting there. But when you hear the sound, or maybe you just recognize that a creature is approaching you, and before maybe you know it's a deer, there might be this, right, this kind of a feeling. So the Buddha continues, and he says, I should say, yeah, so he is the Buddha when he's telling this, but he's describing what he was doing before he was awakened. So the Buddha-to-be thought, is that fear and dread? Then I thought, why do I always meditate expecting that fear and terror to come? Why don't I get rid of that fear and dread just as it comes, while remaining just as I am? So instead of like anticipating it, why doesn't he work with it as it arises? Instead of always being on the alert for it, waiting or expecting, or maybe filled with apprehension or something like this. So then he continues and he says, then that fear and dread that came upon me as I was walking. I didn't stand still or sit down or lay down until I had got rid of that fear and dread while walking. So the Buddha talks about being aware of his posture. He's doing walking meditation, presumably. Has his fear and dread, and he just continues to walk. And he stays with it, stays with the feeling, stays with his movement, well, this awareness of walking. And then the fear and dread go away. Then that fear and dread came upon me as I was standing. I didn't walk or sit down or lie down until I got rid of that fear and dread while standing. Again, aware of his posture and maintaining his posture. So this kind of mindfulness of the body, as well as I was talking about a little bit in the guided meditation, but not only just the body, but how the body is in space. This awareness of standing means that you're aware of where you are in relationship to everything else around you, and kind of a more global, generalized a mindfulness of the body. There might be a way in which we could sometimes do mindfulness of the body that's a little bit more tight or narrow, but in this way it's a little bit more expanded and not collapsed, but not completely broad and out out to all everything else except the body, but just more kind of like a global mindfulness of the body. So then, of course, and the Buddha continues in saying, then that fear and dread came upon me as I was sitting, and then he remained sitting until the fear and dread went away. And then the fear and dread came upon me as I was lying down. And I didn't sit up or stand still or walk until I'd got rid of that fear and dread while lying down. So for me, I feel a little bit comforted that he's giving four different descriptions, or he's doing four different activities and when fear and dread came up over him. So right as before he was an awakened person, he was experiencing fear and dread, and just set up a way in which to work with it. And one way was to be working with posture. This is a way in which we can, with this spaciousness, there's some way in which if we don't collapse around our experience, this spaciousness maybe allows something different to unfold. Something that can't unfold if we are really only focused on that which is uncomfortable, or only focused on that which is not going well, or the difficulties. But this more global awareness, the global mindfulness of the body, of the posture, allows us to recognize that there's some of our experiences are neutral. Maybe that if we're walking, the movement of the arms through space, for example, or if we're sitting, the pressure of the chair or cushion against the body, maybe that's neutral. So in addition to that really uncomfortable fear and dread that's there, there are some neutral experiences happening too. And that might help us to not feel overwhelmed. That might help us to feel a little bit more grounded and connected, centered, maybe. Maybe that's the word. A little more centered, so we don't get thrown off by the fear and dread as it arises. Then the Buddha continues a little bit, and he says, my energy was roused and unflagging. My mindfulness was established and lucid. My body was tranquil and undisturbed. And then my mind was immersed in samadhi. So we can imagine that samadhi is a word that we can think about as collectedness or unified or something like this. So the Buddha offers two ways to work with fear. One is to bring to mind something that's inspiring, somebody that's inspiring. Maybe there's something we read in a book. Maybe there's a story that we know about. Maybe we heard a podcast or saw a documentary. Maybe it's a religious leader like the Buddha himself. Maybe it's Martin Luther King, Dr. King, that is inspiring. And it's really helpful to practice and consider these things before we need them. Like, what is it that's that promotes the best in us, that promotes a certain amount of centeredness and groundedness? What is inspiring for us in a way that supports us, not in a way that sets up, oh, that's so inspiring, and then we might have the secret, but I can never do that. That's not what we're looking here. Like, what is it that allows us to tap into our potential? That allows us to tap into ideas about what's possible. That might be bigger than we might imagine if we didn't have those ideas. So the Buddha talked about with fear, maybe to have some inspiration in the Buddha Dharma Sangha. And to have some mindfulness of the posture, mindfulness of the body in a kind of a more global way. So in these two different ways can be a support for us. So returning to Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. King saying, I'm going to change the pronouns here. The ultimate measure of a person is not where they stand in moments of comfort and convenience, but where they stand at times of challenge and controversy. So can we, if when we find ourselves in difficulties, can we allow the best version of ourselves to show up? And this will take practice. This will take practice to just become aware of what is supportive for us. What does inspire us? What does it feel like to have mindfulness of the body, the global body? So that when challenge and controversy, when difficulties arise, we can have the best version of ourselves. So that we can help others. So that we can be an exemplar to others. And in this way, when we find difficulties, we can all rise up and meet those difficulties in a way that Dr. King would appreciate, in a way that Dr. King would applaud, in a way that Dr. King might even be inspired. Thank you.